This is a replay of the Tuesday night, September 3rd, WGN show. We started right at 10. If you don't hear yourself on it, it's because you didn't call. I hope you'll rectify that soon. We're live Monday through Thursday evenings, and unless sports preempt us, that's from 10 to 1 Central. Dial 888-876-5593. My toll-free number from OneVoip for the world's best customer service. It's OneVoip. Check them out at the number 1-VOIP.com. You'll be really glad you did.
Direct from the edge of the lunatic fringe, it's the Raleigh James Show.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. It was the 3rd of September. Well, we are Play Papa was a Rolling Stone, since once a year it actually is the 3rd of September, and that would be right now on WGN Radio, 888-876-5593, 8888-R-O-L-L-Y-E. Several things on my mind, a lot of requests to play, but of course your calls trump all, so by all means, do call. All right, now, while we're at it, a few things caught my eye earlier today. One, actually, I've had this on my desk for about a week now and been meaning to tell you about it, and that is, if you don't know, you now have permanent access to free weekly credit reports. Now, this is from annualcreditreport.com. Any other site is not the real deal. There are many offers from the big three credit bureaus that will be happy to give you reports for a price. This is the absolute free deal, and in the past, every American was allowed once a year to have a free copy of their credit report from all three credit bureaus, pulling them individually. Well, then, of course, the pandemic hit, and they started to put a lot of things in place, including the concept that you could pull them weekly. Well, now that's been extended, and the bottom line is you have permanent access to free weekly credit reports. This will not give you your credit score because, of course, that's extrapolated in many different ways. You can pay for it, but whether or not that will match whatever the lender's specifics are for using, hard to say. But the reason that you should do this, and you should, is that there is so much breaching of websites, of databases, of you name it. You probably read recently that in Florida, a big database, we're talking literally trillions, I am not making that up, of people in harm's way. Of course, a couple hundred million where their social security number is now on the dark web. You can go on and on. Many countries have things in place where individuals own their own identity and they can do much to try and protect themselves. Well, not in America. You don't basically own your own identity. When you have, say you have a credit card, the credit company owns your data. In other words, what you spent, where you spent it, things like that. And surely they can sell it. They can market it. There's some limitation into whether or not it's identifiable, but the bottom line is they own your transactions. You don't. Well, in the process, your personally identifying information can be compromised and is. We talk about it, I'd say, every month at least. There's another breach of some sort or other, the one in Florida being probably the biggest to date, literally trillions of people affected. But one of the things you can and should do, and it's absolutely free, is pull your credit report. If not weekly, if you're not like me, you're not manic about it, at least monthly on all three bureaus. And what you're looking for is, did anybody open credit in your name? Now, if you want, you can put freezes on the accounts so that no one, including you, can open accounts in your name. And that might be the way to go if you're not planning to initiate new accounts anytime soon. But the bottom line is this is probably the single best weapon you have in protecting yourself. And most people are unaware that it exists, or if they are aware, they don't realize that the annual credit report now is the weekly credit report. The website is still annualcreditreport.com, but do it. Pull all three. Every now and then you'll come across a situation where you won't be able to pull from one of the big three. The reason is that they believe there was fraud at some point. When that happens, usually they'll have a phone number you can call and get it that way. Worst case scenario, you'll have to write. But you should. It's something that I think is all of our responsibilities at this point. You should protect yourself by at least knowing what is going on. Now, for the credit companies, the credit cards, there's a lot of regulations that protect you, and the companies know it, and therefore they're ever on the lookout for fraud, and sometimes maybe overreacting when you go to make a charge that's legit and it's denied because they're not sure and all that. But if you're talking about debit, for instance, you don't have the same protections, period. So beware of that. All right, so I wanted to mention that. And it came up the other day when I mentioned it to somebody I knew. You know, you can get it every week now. What? I didn't know that. Well, yes. And that was supposed to sunset after the pandemic, but with all that's been going on, it is there in perpetuity. So by all means, take advantage of that. All right. So 888-876-5593, 8888-RALEIGH. Yeah, every day there's 1 to 20 stories in the news that'll scare the living daylights out of you, usually endangering your health or well-being in one way or another. Well, today's story is why frying pans are making you sick. And you might have actually heard this before, because I think a lot of people are aware that Teflon is probably not your best choice when looking at cooking utensils for a lot of reasons. But very few people are aware of Teflon flu. Now, of course, some people are aware that, well, the Teflon coating can come off, you can eat it, it can be toxic and all that. Well, Teflon flu is a little different. What this is, if you are cooking with Teflon and you're preheating a pan, for instance, the fumes can be very toxic. And so if you're overheating the cookware and there's any nonstick coating, but particularly Teflon, the fumes can make you very sick. Obviously, some restaurant workers know very well, but assuming that the heated cookware is dry, like when you didn't add a lot of oil or enough water, that's really all it takes. And the symptoms, fever, muscle aches, chills, fatigue, that's why they call it Teflon flu, because it really mimics the flu. And according to those in the know, it's massively underreported. But apparently, if you have, you know, persistent flu-like symptoms, this could be a cause. So keep that in mind. I think there were about, I don't know, over 250 cases of Teflon flu reported to American poison centers last year. And you go back 20 years ago and it was virtually nil, although the problem was there as much. So people are starting to realize it. So in addition to using a lot more liquid when you're preheating, the other thing is you may decide you're going to cook with something else. And I go for myself cast iron for frying, but stainless steel will work as well. But be aware that it's not the panacea that the manufacturers have made it out to be. And it's not just Teflon. It's called Teflon flu, but it's anything that is coated is likely to off-gas and potentially be a problem. So 888-876-5593, 8888-RALEIGH. We'll get to your requests and hopefully your calls too. But right now, I want to mention the Sea Crane Company. You know, last week I was talking about the CC2E, which I love, and I actually confused it with the EP Pro. And I thought, gosh, I hope next week they're going to have me talk about the EP Pro, and they are. Again, the 2E is a great bedside companion. It has all the bells and whistles in the world. But what I love about the EP Pro is that it is just a throwback to yesteryear. Back in the day when you could go get a radio that was just a radio and would give you terrific AM and FM reception. It'd be a slide rule dial. You just, glide down that dial yourself, the simplicity of needle and dial tuning. Well, it's all back in the CPEP Pro. In fact, about the only bells and whistles that it has a dial light. Okay, so one button to give you the bright dial light, which is nice. No Clark, no alarm, no presets, nothing. nothing like that. There is a tone switch, which is nice, plus bass and treble control. So you can fine tune it, make it your perfect pitch. And it's really, really nice that way. As I mentioned, the reception is terrific. It's got that twin coil ferrite antenna, which makes AM listening just a pleasure. Not only does it sound better, but you will pick up more things with it. There's a line in jack, because the speaker is so nice, you might want to use it to connect your smartphone for much better audio. You can find out more at ccradio.com anytime, ccradio.com. If you're looking for simplicity and reception, you want the CCEP Pro. So ccradio.com. But if you cannot go online, they have the world's best customer service, and you can call them 800-522-8863, 800-522-8863. T-U-N-E. They'll give you all the information. They'll mail you a catalog if you want a hard copy, or you can order over the phone, whatever you need. So 800-522-8863. Or if you can go online, this catalog not only has great products, but wonderful information about radio too. So if you're a radio lover, you should have it bookmarked. ccradio.com. But if you're looking for simplicity, high performance, an analog dial with digital performance, it's the CCEP Pro. You tell them Raleigh sent you from WGN Radio. That was Cindy's request from Chicago. She mentioned Pete Fountain, and as far as I know, Pete Fountain never did it. Then she said, maybe Benny Goodman. Well, actually, it was the Benny Goodman Quartet, and this was 1937 on Victor. And boy, talk about talent packed. They didn't put it on a label, but of course, that's Benny on clarinet, Lionel Hampton on vibraphone, Gene Krupa on drums, and Teddy Wilson on piano. So does it get better than that? I don't think so. There's over 700 versions of that, and the Benny Goodman Quartet was not listed in secondhand songs. And I thought, well, that's funny. I got the 78 right here, and now we heard it. So 888-876-5593, 8888 Raleigh. And speaking of Cindy, there she is. All right, there's your request.
It was very lovely. I loved the music from the 20s, like 20s, 30s. I have to forget out my CD, but I've been so busy. But anyhow, I had a song by Brenda Lee I heard that's pretty good. Sweet Nothing?
Yeah, big hit. Okay.
Yeah, that's pretty good. And then the other thing, I don't know if you heard, my cousin Mike, who lives with me, he was listening to the radio, and he heard that the incubation period for Listeria could be up to 16 weeks.
Yeah, Listeria absolutely can hit you later. Of all the food poisonings, that's why Listeria is very vexing, because it can have a very delayed effect.
That's scared, but, I don't know. I mean,
believe me, here we go again. Every time we call, I have to remind you about Thinkers Anonymous. You have to stop that.
Someone in the association manager in the condo condo complex told me he even told me I think too much.
Well, you do. Now, here,
you're by yourself and you think too much, and then on top of it, I have bipolar.
Right. The deal with listeriosis is normally most people will know in less than 2 weeks, but it can be as short as 2 days. Or it can be as long as 3 months. And so that's what people, when they're saying, oh, man, this is possibly really daunting. Yeah, because it can be 3 months, but rarely is it. Now, on your list of things to worry about it, this should probably be number 9,832.
Well, I didn't eat much lunch meat this summer, so I had tuna salad sandwiches.
Well, we could get into that too. Basically, anything you eat could, if it's improperly stored or prepared, give you food poisoning. But are you going to worry about it? No. But when you say tuna salad, the problem there, of course, is how it's stored and how long it's out there at room temperature. Oh yeah, that can be a delightful petri dish of disaster. But I wouldn't worry about it.
Yeah. Well, anyhow, I was thinking of making homemade toffee.
Toffee?
Not coffee, toffee.
Oh, no, I say toffee with a C. I know. I was just wondering how good your fire insurance is.
toffee. No. Yeah. I
understand it. There's many recipes online, which maybe there shouldn't be. And I love the way they say just 3 ingredients, just 15 minutes. You know, what could possibly go wrong? Well, I guess you're going to find out. Try it.
I made homemade caramel with chocolate and walnuts, mm-hmm. and that came out pretty good.
Well, good, good. And you didn't have to move over it, so that's good.
And then the other thing is just just from all the stress I've been under my whole life, you know, bipolar people are always stressed out. I know you're going to say it again. I can't help it, though. I was thinking about going back to my Lutheran church. They have a Saturday night service. And I just go mental about thinking about going there. I can't help it. I mean, it's just easier not to forget about it.
Let's look at this. So you're thinking about going to the church service. It's on a Saturday night. Okay, fine. How close is it to your house?
Not very far. Just across town.
Just across town. You have transportation to get there. You can drive.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, so you can get there. So we're not afraid of leaving the house and getting in the car and driving to the church. So when's the first time the fear strikes?
Well, when the minister starts staring at me like a psycho because I look like Barbie.
Don't worry about this.
They do so many. And then the one said I went to the one church. You've never been to parochial school. You're worldly, I'm Jezebel, I'm coming for money. The one minister was like at Bible study.
No.
Stop.
I don't think you're Miss Cleo. You don't have a crystal ball, and you're definitely not a mind reader. So what is going on here is you are reading into people and deciding what they are thinking. Don't do that.
Well, the minister even told me to get a job, and I didn't even say anything about any job is acceptable to the church except prostitution and Hollywood.
Wait. Here's the deal. The minister didn't walk up to you, start a conversation, look at you, and say, Cindy, get a job. So how did this happen?
Well, I was sitting there in Bible study. He just said he's bitter about people telling him he's a little short and they have no money and just like
this is what the minister is telling you at Bible study?
Yeah.
Find a different church. But that's all I can do.
There is no nice church in Chicago in my neighborhood. There is none. I don't know. There's just
I find it hard to believe, but the big thing is it's a recurrent theme that you decide in your mind what people are thinking. Don't do that. There's no way for you to know unless you're going to hang out your shingle as a psychic.
I try and ignore it, and then if I ignore it, it's just...
Well, you know, if... Like, you, honey, if you ignore it, what's happening is you're building the mansion in the sky. It's not happening. It's your thoughts regurgitating like a reverb loop. Don't do this.
Yeah.
Just tell yourself to cut it out. All right.
All right,
we're going to try to find you a better church. All right, Cindy, thanks for calling. Time for the news. I appreciate it.
All right.
Good deal. Oh, man. All right, we'll find out what's going on in the world at large. Gee, I didn't know it was this bad on WGN Radio. WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. It was Mary Ellen in Oaklawn who said she'd heard it by Bernadette Peters but wondered what the original was, and there it is. It's Carla Thomas. It came out in 1960. It was recorded late in 1960. It was recorded, I think, in November in Memphis, and she wrote it. And before there was Stax, there was Satellite Records, and the brother-sister team who owned Stax started at Satellite, and it was released on Satellite, actually. And it was obvious that this record was going to do well, and so Atlantic picked it up for distribution. But that is the original Gee Whiz that that Carla Thomas wrote. And I was talking to Mary Ellen, and I said, you know, Gee Whiz, there's a totally other Gee Whiz. And in fact, came out 2 years earlier on Class, 1958 on Class. And not the same song, but every time someone requests Gee Whiz, I think of the Bob and Earl record. And it's never what they want to hear, but it really was tasty.
Gee Whiz, I can't believe that you love me. I can't believe that an angel like you could fall in love with me so tenderly. Gee Whiz, why do I thrill when you kiss me? My heart stands still when I'm holding your hand. The feeling is oh, so grand. Oh, so grand.
WGN Radio, and that's the Bob and Earl version. Yeah, version is a completely different song. But so we made Mary Ellen happy with Carla Thomas, and I made myself happy with Bob and Earl. Yes, indeed. All right, Dave and LaSalle, welcome to WGN Radio.
Hi, Raleigh.
How are you, Dave?
I'm doing good. Hey, listen, I have a song, but I also have one little bit of tidbit of information I'd like to ask you about.
Yeah.
How about I give you the song first?
Okay.
It's called Boom a Dip Dip by Stan Robinson.
I don't know if I know this.
It was a single. I'm taking early 60s.
Do you know the label?
It was a black label. I don't
think, won't help. All right.
A black label with silver print. A boom, a dip, dip. And I know one thing.
I found it.
Glean from
I found it. It's okay. Imperial. Actually, it's Imperial. It's, it was an early Monument record. I'll be damned.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
It was an early Monument. Now, wait a minute. This is going to be interesting.
Yes,
Tex Davis co-wrote it. Tex Davis was about my closest friend in Nashville, and his real name was his real name was William Duchette. And Tex managed what's his name? He was really big. It'll come to me in a moment here. Gene Vincent. He managed Gene Vincent and the Blue
Caps. Oh, Bebopalula.
Yeah, right. Exactly. That, there's a story there too. But anyway, so apparently he co-wrote this. Yeah. So now let me see. I don't know that I've ever heard it, and that's very interesting. So let's find out.
Hey, there's some drums in it.
Well, I'm sure there is.
The drummer didn't lay anything back. Listen, this guy here,
I have it. Wait a minute. I have this record right here. I put this on a computer, so I must own it. Let me hear some of this, because I swear I don't remember it. Let me see.
Okay. There's drums in it.
Oh, yeah, of course there's drums in it. Oh, I have heard this.
Well, I danced at the schools with a four-piece band all the way from New York to...
Yeah, now I know why I didn't remember it. All right, well, there we go. I own it. That's interesting.
He did have two sons, supposedly, that were in or started the Black Crook.
Right. Chris Robinson and Rich Robinson. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know.
But I figured you'd have it on your...
That's so funny. Thing. Well, obviously, I own the record, so...
There you go. Okay, the one thing I did notice in that song is the drummer didn't leave nothing to... Nothing back. You really get into it. But, okay.
I don't know who played on that session. Of course, Tex is no longer alive. But that's so funny. No, I boom a dip dip. I won't forget it.
Right. I kind of like it. Hey, listen, I got a little bit of thing I want to ask you about here. One word. I'll try to make this. I'm not going to turn it into a quiz and ask things. But listen. When we're driving and we pull up to a stoplight, the red light is always on top. Is that right?
Generally, in this country, that is true.
Okay, you're right. Now, I got this info from a documentary. The red light is always on top in the entire United States, except one. There's one light in Syracuse where the red light is on the bottom.
Okay.
Now, there's a story behind it, and I don't know what. I'll hang up and leave it with you. Why is it only one light? Is it allowed? I mean, is that a law in the United States? The red light has to be on top?
If it was a law, it's certainly not federal. It'd be state. But for the most part, it's just the way it is. But this is Tipperary and Tip Hill, and it's well known. And it was settled by Irish people. And this goes back to when the Erie Canal was being built, because the Irish were the laborers. And so Syracuse is sort of the hub of that whole system. So when they finished the canal, I think a lot of the Irish people stayed. So I don't know, but I assume that the deal is has to do with nobody wanted to put British red above Irish green.
Okay, that's the story. I knew there had to be some kind of story with this.
But this is a well-known, it's the only one, a well-known tourist attraction, and there's a heritage memorial. Yep. And so, Syracuse doesn't have a lot going for it, really. And so if you go there, you'll get to know all about the canal and about the Irish and everything else. And so,
I've never been there, and I guess I wasn't really aware of all that, except now that every time I pull up to a stoplight, I'm probably going to look and make sure.
Yeah.
Well, am I going to find one somewhere in the U.S. where the red light's on the bottom?
Well, I'll tell you, in broadcasting, people know Syracuse pretty well, because Syracuse University used to have a really, really good radio TV school. And in fact, when it was just a radio school, Dick Clark went there, for instance, a lot of other people. So to this day, Syracuse University is famous for that. But, there's not too much about Syracuse, I can tell you. But they do have this light, and I'm pretty sure it was that Irish fight.
Well, that's probably the story I was looking for. I said there has to be something.
I think that's it.
Why that's the only light and why it's still there.
Okay, so here's what I want to know. When you're in Texas and you're driving around Laredo, why do you think that you've crossed the border? Because instead of stop, it's saying Alta. Who decided on that? So
I get you. And that's what I said. But every now and when I pull up to a stoplight while I'm tapping my fingers waiting for it to change,
yeah,
I'll look and say, make sure there's all these red lights on the top.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure it was quite the fight.
Okay.
All right. Thanks. Okay, appreciate
Raleigh,
it.
Thanks for
good deal.
That.
Absolutely.
Okay, bye.
All right. So, yeah, like I say, I'm sure it was a fight, and probably you could read all about it or go to the museum, because after all, if you're going to be in Syracuse, you will be looking for something to do. All right. We'll get to Ellen is in Lyle. There's room for you too. 888-876-5593-8888 Raleigh on WGN Radio.
Somebody that likes all the same things you do. Somebody who can make you or break you anytime they want to. I met her at a red light, love at first sight. Can this be true? Well, she's good for me, yeah, she told me I was good for her too. Now I don't wanna jump into anything. I've been trying to use some self-restraint. Man, it's amazing, she's the same kind of crazy as me. It's getting hard to use a ladder, cause I keep climbing down just to kiss her. And if she's out of my sight for a minute or two, I start to miss her. We stay all tangled up in each other's arms, and it's so nice. She always gets my name right. If there's anything at all that's wrong with her, it's something I just can't see. Ain't no doubt about it, she's the same kind of crazy as me.
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. That is a great record. That's Delbert McClinton. It was Johnny D. who recorded it. It has a fine backbeat and great lyrics. Yeah, she talks in her sleep, but she always gets my name right. Well, get down with your bad self. From 2002, and the album was Room to Breathe. All right, so 888-876-5593-8888, Raleigh. And Ellen's got some requests. So, Ellen, what you want to hear?
Hi, I wanted to hear Candyman. I used to play it all the time when I was
Now, when you say Candyman, younger. Are you talking about the wonderful Roy Orbison record, or are we talking about the questionable 70s record?
Candyman.
Oh, Candyman.
And the other side was Timing was the other side.
Well, actually, no, Timing was on a two-sided 45 that you got as a golden oldie thing. But yes, Candyman. I'll not only play that for you, but you know, that isn't the original. And so I'll play you. Yeah, it's got an interesting story, and I'll tell you next hour.
Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks, Ellen. Appreciate the call. All right.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Yes. Yes. In fact, a handyman. Yeah, it goes back to the Sparks of Rhythm. But Jimmy Jones is in the picture. You know that. All right. So 888-876-5593. Jim in Richmond has an update. How you doing, Jim?
I'm doing all right. First, I wanted to ask you first, how was the dentist today?
It was a disaster. It was almost funny. So they used the drill and got all the old glue off the stuff, and they were putting on a new retainer. Anyway, they couldn't. They got one on, but I couldn't talk. So they had to take that off, and then they said, you'll need to see an orthodontist. Well, I should have gone in the first place. So I'll go do that next. It's always something.
Well, I'm sorry you had a bad day.
That's all right.
I wanted to tell you about Friday night, and I have not told anybody in my family or my friends, because after you hear the story, you'll know they want me committed.
No.
I listened to your show.
Yeah.
And Friday night, you know, laughed when I heard me and stuff. And then all I remember is I turned you off.
Uh-huh.
And I went in the living room.
Uh-huh.
And then and it had to be like, you know, one something.
Okay.
And then I headed to the bathroom because I had to go really bad.
Okay.
And the next thing I knew, it was 4 o'clock in the morning and I'm laying on the floor in the bathroom.
Uh-huh.
And I never made it to to the bathroom.
Right, absolutely.
And, I looked on my phone because I heard what I got up from the chair was my alarm went off for my blood sugar,
uh-huh.
and it said glucose is low.
That's what I was thinking.
So,
yeah.
So I had to go really bad, and I was going to go and get my orange juice and stuff,
mm-hmm.
and then I realized that I was down that long because on my phone they give a graph,
mm-hmm.
and it was like from 1 o'clock to 4 o'clock, it kept repeating, blood sugar's low,
right.
blood sugar's low, blood
right.
sugar's low, blood sugar's low.
Right.
So it just scared the heck out of me. And then I got up and took care of everything. And I went, laid down in bed. I was mm-hmm. too afraid to go to sleep.
Of course. Of course. That's so understandable.
So I figured it all out and stuff. And then, later... Saturday, I took a nap in the middle of the day because
yep.
I was, so exhausted.
Of course.
But that I don't even remember falling. And
no.
there's only less than 3 feet available floor space.
Yeah.
And I'm surprised I didn't hit my head on the facilities. I was just, laying
You're
there.
Lucky.
And then when
mm-hmm.
I went to get up, I'm going, where am I and,
mm-hmm.
and what? And I turn and look, and there's the facility.
Mm-hmm.
And I finally rolled over, and I was able to get up. Because if I'm on my back or I'm on my stomach, I can't get up,
You're not alone.
So I got up.
Now,
right.
let me ask you, because you're using the Libre 3 now, which is just great. I think that
mm-hmm.
you need to react immediately when you get any type of a warning, like that minute.
Oh, yeah. I realized that.
Yeah.
And I was just that. And I find this Libre 3, they give you a reading every minute.
Yes.
Whereas the dextrose every 5 minutes.
Right.
And I had a small bag of potato chips the other night.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was looking at my meter, and it was, I check it all the time. At one point, I looked and said I check 75 times a day.
That's
but,
okay.
I watched it go up to 300,
oh.
and then it came back down because of the eating the potato chips. Because, like I said, normally if you eat something, it'll go up, and then it'll come back down again
right.
as the insulin kicks in. And then I found that out about the pizza I ate
uh-huh.
last week, that it went up and down. So I cut the pizza out, so now I'm cutting the potato chips out. But I really love this Libre 3.
Yeah.
And I called them today because when I had the Libre 2, when you would see the number that you're at,
mm-hmm.
say 102,
mm-hmm.
the phone used to go 102. It would tell you.
Mm-hmm.
And this one doesn't. So I tried calling them, and the guy just drove me nuts. He was, I can't
yeah.
read the
right.
phone that well.
Of course not.
Go here and go here.
Yeah.
And I go, it's not on there. It's not on there, not where he was telling me to go.
Right.
And then he says, well, have you updated your phone? I said, no, they have a new one, 17.6. And you got to do that first.
Okay.
Because they were telling me for 2 days to update it.
Yeah.
So I turned around and updated it today and went back to where he said to go. And it still wasn't on there.
Mm.
So tomorrow I go to the glaucoma specialist. I was supposed to go last week, but he got sick.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where I'm going. And right in the same mall is the Apple store, and that's
Perfect.
Where I'm going tomorrow.
Absolutely. Go to that genius bar and say, fix this.
Well, they fixed
yeah.
the Apple. They fixed this Libre 2.
Yeah,
because
sure.
Because when they fixed it, and on my phone, everything told me. Like,
right.
if on my contacts, it'll come up, and instead of just ringing, it'll say, Charlie's on the phone.
Right, right.
And
yeah.
stuff like that.
Those are settings.
Ringing, so.
Right, those are settings,
right.
and they can easily do that for you. No problem there at
right.
all. Yeah. Well, that is really, really scary stuff. But you know, and I'm sure.
You know, I can't tell anybody in my family.
No, and you shouldn't. You shouldn't. You shouldn't. There's, you know, the good news is it was just a warning. You now know you're going to react immediately to anything like that. But the other thing, of course, as you well know, is, and I'm sure your doctors have told you again and again, what you're trying to do is level out those spikes so you don't spike high and then drop low. You want to do as much as you can to level it out, which is better for your body all the way around. So,
Most of the day, I'm under 100.
Which is great.
I've never in my whole life been that way since I've had this, because I'm watching what I eat and everything.
That's wonderful.
But then it always seems to go up high in the evening, even if I don't eat anything, because it's my body reacting, you know.
Yeah, it's your metabolism, of course. Of course.
Right.
You're human. So, well, no, I wouldn't tell your family either. No way. But it was good nothing happened other than it's a good warning, and you're going to be much more proactive when you see that your blood sugar is dropping.
Right. And then also, I don't know how I did it, because I have I didn't hurt anything going down. So.
Well, you know. I'll just consider that, you know, your angels and the good Lord and everything else, and who cares? Let's not question the good things.
Right. And then I tell everybody, when I die, I'm going to walk up to my angel guardian and give him a big hug.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Well, an angel, I mean.
He'll probably be there to walk you over the next life. Yeah, absolutely.
Right. Right. I don't want to keep you.
Well, this
I don't want to drag it out.
A scary story, but a good story. And, you know, even if it doesn't go into serious warning, if you see it dropping, that's when to go ahead and say, I'm going to go have something.
Right.
All right. And good.
I'm just, like I said last night, I would tell you what happened.
Oh, man. Scary, scary stuff, and but then, thank God.
And then could I ask a song request?
Sure, what you want to hear.
Okay, you think you talked to Stacy? And she wanted Try a Little Tenderness.
Okay, yes, absolutely. The Otis Redding version.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Could you make the next song after that, When a Man Loves a Woman?
Okay.
Because then they would be like in the same general tone.
All right. So, no, that, Try a Little Tenderness. That was Lisa in Dundee who wanted to hear that.
Lisa,
and,
okay.
I'll play that next. And then When a Man Loves a Woman. All right, Percy Sledge is coming up. All right, good deal.
Right,
you got it.
You don't have to do two at a time. You're going to do it the next time after.
Well, we'll see. All right, thanks.
I thank you very, very much, and I hope you have a good evening.
You too. Appreciate it. All right.
Okay.
So scary stuff, but it ended well. Just a gentle warning. All right. So we'll get to Nick in Baltimore next hour. We're going to talk about radio. Yes. And we're going to hear Try a Little Tenderness and When a Man Loves a Woman. And right now we're going to hear the news on WGN Radio.
Oh, she may be weary. Them young girls, they do get weary wearing that same old shaggy dress, But when she gets weary, try a little tenderness, You know she's waiting, just anticipating for things that she'll never, 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 never possess. But while she's there waiting, and without them, try a little tenderness. Gotta do. It's not just sentimental, no. She has her grief
WGN Radio. I'm Robbie James. And yes, Otis Redding, Try a Little Tenderness, 1966. That's probably the most famous version of that. But believe it or not, there are over 300 versions, and the song goes back to 1933. It was recorded in the fall of 32, and Jack Payne and his band released it in January of 33. And then, like I say, hundreds of others after that, including, it was interesting that Jim wanted to hear some Percy Sledge, because Percy Sledge recorded it as well. Yeah, as everybody and their cousin. But yeah, he recorded the same month that Otis Redding did, actually. And so, and a few months later, here comes Jimmy Dean. All right, well, 888-876-5593. Before we get to Nick in Baltimore to talk about radio, Steve Bryant, welcome back to WGN Radio.
Well, thank you, Raleigh. This is beginning to be a habit.
I hope so, yes.
Well, thank you. I heard you mention the song Candyman.
Yeah, well, it turned out I couldn't understand her. She wanted Handyman.
oh, Handyman. Okay. Okay, that kind of blows what I was going to. Now, anyway, you mentioned, of course, the song from Willy Wonka, which I don't think really appeared in the movie. Candyman.
Yeah, I'm fortunate that I don't go to movies, but yes. Now, of course, the Candyman that we all know and love was Roy Orbison. Different song.
Well, yes. Well, exactly. Yeah, but there's
Sammy Davis Jr., Candyman. Yeah. I always thought it was about drugs.
If you ever saw Willy Wonka, you'd understand it probably was.
Oh, okay. There you go.
Yeah, it's chocolate, I think, was a euphemism entire movie. But now, when you talk about Candyman, it reminds me, I was lucky enough to go to a lot of the folk music clubs back in the 1960s in Greenwich Village.
Yeah.
And it was kind of nice. There were a few shining stars that really stood out from everybody, from all the... All the really horrible, come on, you young sailors,
yeah.
But every once in a while, somebody like Richie Havens would come along and really kind of turn the tables upside down. But I remember being in one of the clubs one night. I was like 13, maybe. It was with my Uncle Ed. And, all these folk singers are all middle-class white kids.
Of course.
And this little black man walks in, very unassuming, and they introduce him, and they said, "Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Mississippi John Hurt."
Oh.
Holy cow. It blew everybody's mind.
Oh, I'll
bet.
I
mean, he could do inhuman things with that guitar. I mean, his fingers, I swear there was a sixth finger there we weren't seeing.
Right.
That he was playing so well.
Yeah.
And just so well that I believe Tom Paxton, one of the middle-class white kids, Tom Paxton wrote a song, I think, called "Have You Seen John Hurt?" Because once he started to play in the Village, he was everywhere. Everybody said, "Oh my God, we've never heard somebody with real talent come through these doors."
Well, not only that, he was over 60 years old at the time.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. He had no idea what he was doing was a big deal.
Right. Right. Because, he started out on OK Records and it flopped. He went back to being a farmer, So, no, he had no idea as far as that goes. Yeah.
But I always admired that. I always admired that, that it was never too late. It's kind of like me.
Oh, no. You already have had an illustrious career, that's to say the least. Home shopping has never been the same since you left it.
Well, you're very kind. You're very kind to say that. And as I said to somebody the other day, after watching just a couple of moments of QVC, it's about all I could take. And I said, well, I know what they're doing. I know, because we went through some sales slumps on QVC.
Oh, yeah.
And whenever we went through sales slumps, management would come to us and say, "You got to sell harder. And I used to go to my peers and say, "Well, if you want to go down hard, that's how we do it."
Yeah.
No, you don't sell hard. Don't sell harder. Sell smarter. I said, and that was our mantra. That's brought us out of a lot of the a lot of the really bad slumps that we had going along the way.
Yeah, it's interesting because obviously sales is the product. We understand that you're there to move it, but the vehicle to do it is entertainment. And there was only a fairly brief period of time where that reigned. Like I said, you know, your stuff always blew me away. But before that, on the little known when they were bicycling tapes from the Jenkintown Mall, I wish I remember the name of this kid, but he was hilarious. I made it a point to see him every night. I have no idea. I didn't buy anything he sold, but a lot of people did. And it made the difference.
It really did. It really did. There were some of them that I watched. And again, of course, I didn't really buy anything, but I watched some of them for absolutely pure entertainment.
Right.
A lot of those little tiny shopping channels popped up all
right.
over the place.
Exactly. Exactly.
And actually, that's happening again. On the high-end, super high-end cable tiers, they have a lot of these goofy, you know, gem network.
Oh, right. I've seen this. Yes, yes. I haven't actually watched any of them, but yes, the specialty shopping networks.
Exactly. And they play the, and of course, I have great disagreements with people who still work in the industry. They play the price game.
Oh.
You know, they go, it's not $99.95. How would you like it if it were $79.95? And they just keep bringing it down.
Right, until it's 57 cents. Right, exactly.
Exactly right. And the shipping and handling was, you know, $83.50.
Yeah. Right.
But Ron Popeil, God rest his soul, and I miss him.
Oh,
really,
yeah. He was the original. He really was. And I know you two were very close.
Oh, God. We used to hang out and just, he was incredible. He was incredible. But he, when he would come on QVC, the first time he came on QVC, he had a food dehydrator.
Right. And I remember that because I looked at that and I said, food dehydrator, that's the back seat of my car.
Thank you. That's exactly what it was. it's sort of I used to call it the bacterial crapshoot.
Right.
Is it going to make fruit chewies or is it going to make, you know, some horrible disease? Well,
yeah.
It'll be one or the other. But he was used to the infomercials, and so he had the whole setup for a 28-minute presentation.
Yeah.
And his first presentation, they gave him 12 minutes, and he bombed horribly.
Right.
And he was so upset, so I was going on with him second, and I went to him and said, look, this is a whole different ballgame. We're going to have 10 to 12 minutes, and we can't have 35 of these things set up, and you can't be making Christmas ornaments in one and, dehydrating squirrels in the other.
Yeah. Roadkill.
He was up to... So I said, let's just do 3 units. We'll do the fruit roll ups, the jerky, it was like I said, and I had sex with your mother.
Right.
He went berserk.
Yeah.
He laid into me words I didn't even know.
Right. Yeah. Conjugated in ways you couldn't imagine. Yeah.
Exactly. So anyway. So he goes away, and I said, "Oh no! This is my ballpark." And I took all but three of the machines off the set, hid them in the back room,
good,
of the studio. He comes out, and it's like a deer in headlights. He said, "We're live with Ron Popeil. Hey, Ron, Ron, show me how it makes fruit roll-ups." Anyway, he's a pro. He went through, and in less than 12 minutes. The entire remaining stock sold out because we focused on what they were selling,
right?
And the primary uses for a dehydrator are fruit roll-ups, jerky, and I think herbs. I think that was the third thing that you would do the bacterial crapshoot with.
Yeah.
But it sold out, so we get off the air, and you looked at me, and I said, "Surprise."
Yeah, right.
He said, "Nobody has ever done that to me." I said, "Welcome to QVC."
And you sold out.
Really? Yeah, we became really tight, really close friends, and the whole nine yards of it. And the reason I brought him up was when he was selling. I forget what the product was. But he used to have boxes printed up, talking about the price game. He would actually have boxes shipped, empty boxes shipped to QVC. And he would say, yeah, you know where this is going.
Yes.
He would pick one up and say, you know, Steve, if you go to your store, you could buy this for $342, and, you know, and it's printed on the box.
Right.
He said, nope. And he picks up another box.
Right.
How about if it we went through the box game?
Yeah.
Well, the lawyer shut him down on that one.
Yeah.
They said, no, Ron, we can't. No. There's nowhere you could go and find that
for
anywhere.
$342. And, right, exactly.
Yeah, it doesn't. It's printed on the box. He said, well, it's on the box. Somebody. He said, no, Ron, nobody's. Let's just go. But anyway, that was his version of the price of the price game. But anyway, well, look, I don't want to take every time. I heard you talk about. And of course, I heard it wrong.
Quite all right. No, that's great. That's a wonderful story. And yes, I miss him and his ilk as well. There were very few who were great pitchmen, but he sometimes in spite of himself, but he was. And the products, I remember the dehydrator was bad enough, but then he came out with a 10-tray dehydrator.
Oh, yes, the thing was like yeah. The skyscraper.
Exactly.
It would break your ceiling. You know? Right. Now you could do everything. Steve, we do Christmas ornaments on the bottom. That was a big thing with him. I never figured that out. You know, you take clay, you put it in, and it bakes the clay. And
right.
Christmas ornaments.
Right. Well, clearly this is a man who never had a tree, but that's all I can say.
That's true. Indeed. Anyway, well, thank you so much.
All right, good deal. Great to hear from you as always. Keep in touch.
I promise. Thank
all right,
you, Ron.
Thanks. All right, so good stuff, good memories, fun stuff. 888-876-5593. And I haven't forgotten the handyman story, which we are going to share because I said I would. But before that, I promised next to Otis Redding, we would play Percy Sledge. And hey, your wish is my command. Coming up on WGN Radio. WGN Radio. I'm Riley James, and that is Percy Sledge. And Quinn Ivey, who had been a disc jockey at WLAY and had worked also at FAME, Florence, Alabama Music Enterprises, he opened Norala for North Alabama, obviously. Norala Recording Studio was in downtown Sheffield, Alabama. It's across the street from Toontown, which Quinn Ivey also owned. And he did a number of things, but it wasn't until he and his partner cut When a Man Loves a Woman that their fortunes really began to change. Right there on 104 East 2nd Street, as I recall, in Sheffield. So there you have it. And that was Jim's request. And, of course, that came out in 1966 on Atlantic. All right. So we will get to the saga of Handyman, the original, which was written by Jimmy Jones, and then the Jimmy Jones hit. And so, all right, but in the meantime, we have, let's see, I'm holding Nick because I know it's going to be a long, long conversation. So let me see if we can get Don from Beloit in before the news. So, Don, welcome back to WGN.
Hey, what an introduction. Wow, okay. Hey, thanks, Riley. Hey, that Mississippi John Hurt song is Candyman Blues, I believe.
Okay.
of course, the Grateful Dead, is, you know, well, much more well-known, sorry, for my world, is just called Plain Old Candyman, which is, mm-hmm. both are awesome, awesome songs, I think. Sorry. I wanted to ask, I just sort of stumbled upon this Wayne Cochran by accident, thinking he was a brother of Eddie Cochran, because they both spell their names the same way, same era, no. But no, no, not quite the same
no,
at all.
No, Wayne Cochran was the real deal. I'll tell you what, anybody in Miami Beach going to his performances at the barn remembers Wayne very, very well.
Yeah.
He was from Georgia, Southern Georgia. In fact,
yeah.
He wrote Last Kiss, which, you know, J. Frank Wilson and the Cavaliers had a hit
right.
with. But he wrote that based on an accident on I-75. But he was a big deal in Miami Beach. And like I say, he played the barn for years and years and years. I mean, you know, everybody had to go see
June
that.
June Taylor, Jackie Gleason.
Well, everybody. No, those are the people who, of course, came to. But, I mean, literally everybody went to the barn. It was just one of those places.
79th and the Causeway.
Yes.
Did you, was it famous when you were there?
I used to drive by it every damn day.
Okay.
Yeah, sure. Right on the 79th Street Causeway at 71st Street if you're in Miami Beach, at 79th Street if you're in Miami. But that's the causeway. And so, sure, absolutely. WIOD's on that causeway.
I was going to ask you to, if you could, I think his first, I don't know, just going through all of them, I think his first, The Coup, I think that is a really cool song. I was going to ask you to play that someday.
Yeah, that was that was King. That was James Brown got him hooked onto King and The Coup, but wasn't much of a hit, to say the least.
I think it's a pretty cool song. Sorry. Right. I thought
but it just wasn't a hit, and that's okay. I think the first hit he had for Miami, of course, is Going Back to Miami, which was a very big deal and in Miami, anyway. But then he did some stuff on Chess and all that kind of stuff. But you had to see him. You see, he was an act that wasn't just good enough to listen to him. That white pompadour, and he later became a preacher, of course, which fit him to a T. So, of course.
His website, his home website, they maintain a website for him, and his history is reported on it. He mentioned, there's a mention of a reporter at that time, a woman from the, doing soul reporting, a woman from the Miami Herald, and that wasn't you by any chance, was it?
No, it wasn't. I missed the Miami Herald. I was too busy working at damn near every radio station on the dial.
Okay. Then, of course, he goes off with, to the new Las Vegas Hilton, and he signs and he's opening with CC Riders or opening for with Ike and Tina Turner, opening both for Elvis. What a trio of acts that was.
He spent a lot of time making appearances in Chicago.
Yep. And Calumet City, of course, get some connections.
Yes. All right. So you want The Coup. It may not be tonight, but if not tonight,
I think
it'll be.
Cool. Okay. Thank you so much.
You betcha. Thanks for calling.
All right.
So, yeah, there are a couple of things. You always had to go see Wayne Cochran. And then the other thing, see Tubby Boots at the Dunes. All right. So, Tubby was an act in of itself, to say the least. All right. So we'll get to Nick in Baltimore. We'll get to Eduardo in Tampa. And we'll get to the Handyman Saga coming up on WGN Radio.
Tell all your friends, they'll come running to me. Here is the
WGN Radio. I'm Robin James. Well, that was Ellen's Request, the one she knows well, Handyman, 1959 on Cub, and she had a two-sided re-release hit because she had Good Timing on the Other Side, which actually came out over a year later. But anyway, here is the saga. If you look at your copy of Handyman by Jimmy Jones on Cub, you'll see that he wrote it along with a co-writer. And the deal is, though, that that wasn't what he first wrote. He wrote Handyman in 1955 while he was with the Sparks of Rhythm. And the deal with the Sparks of Rhythm was they got a deal on Apollo Records, and they cut four songs, and they put out, nothing was a hit. And so he leaves the group. And so the group goes back into the studio and re-records Handyman. And now, by the way, of course, no doubt about it, Jimmy Jones wrote it. Well, a lot of doubt about it when you saw the single on Apollo, because it claimed Andrew Barksdale and Charles Mermenstein wrote it. And this is how it sounded originally. This is the original Handyman.
And pick up on what I'm putting down. I said, baby, can't you understand? I'm your handyman. Well, I'm not the kind that uses pencil or tool. I'm handling with love, and that's my rule. Life is broken heart, I know I can. I'm your handyman. Well, in love affair, needs repair.
I thought it was just the best. I loved it. Sparks of Rhythm. But what happened when Jimmy Jones ran into Otis Blackwell? And you know Otis. Things like All Shook Up and Don't Be Cruel and Fever and Great Balls of Fire. Should I go on? Anyway, he gets together with Jimmy, and Otis and Jimmy revamped it, and then Cub released the result, which you heard in 1959 that was the hit. I think eventually Jimmy Jones got his royalties back on the Sparks of Rhythm, but remember, the record probably sold 12 copies. I bought one. But so there you have the history of Handyman, and I hope Ellen liked the original. Good Time, and a year later, about four or five singles later on Cub, came out a year later, and was, you know, the second hit. It was a good follow-up, and it did well, but he didn't write it. All right, so that's the story in a nutshell. And Nick is in Baltimore. Welcome to WGN Radio.
Hey, how you doing, Raleigh?
All right, how about yourself?
Thanks for taking my call.
Always.
I'm feeling a little bit, I've been sick a few days, but
no.
I'm a little better now. Hey, can I have a request.
Okay.
And it's not a record.
Mm.
Can you have Steve on again?
Anytime he'll call.
Whole evening or something. He's so.
Well, you know, he always wonderful. Joins me. We have an annual tradition. He always joins me on Christmas.
Yeah, like that. Yeah, so that's something to really look forward to. That's coming up.
Yeah.
So.
But anytime he wants to call, he goes to the head of the class.
So yeah, he's just fantastic. I love his story.
Yeah, they're great.
Love his stories. I have a suggestion for Jim too. Because I've fallen in bathrooms before.
Oof.
And that can be very devastating.
Oh, it can be, obviously. But the only possible good thing is if it's a fairly small bathroom and you're somewhat alert, you've got something to hold on to on the way down.
Right. That's my suggestion. There are no-slip mats you can get.
Yeah.
I'm going to buy some myself. So to prevent slipping, that'd be my suggestion.
If you're passing out, you that won't matter.
Yeah, that's true. But the other thing too is to have things close by.
Yes,
you set your room up or wherever you are.
Yes,
so all of your necessities are right there.
Yes.
That's how my setup is.
Absolutely.
I have it at arm's length.
Right. Right.
So you're not reaching for something in the night and...
Exactly.
Something can happen.
Right.
For safety's sake. So
yeah.
I hope he's okay and, wish him well.
Yeah.
My question was this goofy station in New York City, this 98.7 thing that Jeff Somalian still owns. I guess it's a temporary thing that they're doing.
What are you see? And I know, of course, he didn't renew the lease with Good Karma, and so that's how the 880 went to sports. But I have not paid attention with what they're doing now on the old ORFM.
It's like, yeah, I wish it was the old ORFM, but it's a...
Or
it's
even when it was Kiss. You know, some people like 99 XLO, but I thought Kiss was great. So, but anyway, what are they doing now?
They're doing like a hot AC,
okay,
a hot adult contemporary format.
Okay.
And it's sad, and then they just put up a website. It's TJ98.7, and it's the morning show, and it says it's a limited engagement, so... I guess it's, you know, until he sells the thing and he wants $50 million for it. I don't think he's going to get that.
I haven't seen the financials on that radio station in so long. I think RKO owned it the last time I really looked at it. But I think the call letters now, what, EPN, I think, are the call letters?
Yeah, right now.
Yeah, right, exactly. And, I have not paid attention at this whatsoever. And so I guess, this is akin to stunting, if you will. I don't know. We'll see what happens.
If they, you know, my question is, why can't the CMA, the Country Music Association, come in and buy something like that?
If
the price is right.
Well, you know, that's so funny because country in New York has always been just a horror. I mean, the only market that's really worse is Boston. But, HN had a run with it for a while, but it's just never been a great deal. And so I don't see them really going to that. But you never know.
Isn't there a Long Island station doing it? I think there's something at 103.1 that's doing
country.
No, it's called The Wolf or something. It's The Wolf.
Okay. All right. That's Connoisseur, if it's the station I'm thinking about. It's Connoisseur Media.
Yeah, I think it is.
Okay. Yeah, and there again shows you how out of touch I am. But wasn't that like at the airport, like in Farmingdale or something? I'd have to ask my morning guy because he's from the area. But I think Connoisseur also owns ALK, you know, HLI. So these are big call letters, but I have no idea. So the Wolf, okay, the Wolf. Why not? I guess they just changed to country this year because I was pretty sure last year they weren't. But
they just flipped.
Oh, okay, all right. And so
5 months ago, I think.
All right, right. New call letters or something, I guess, to go with a Wolf, right? So how's it doing?
I guess it's doing okay because it's still there.
You can listen live, listen in Morning Drive, and see how many local commercials are on it.
Yeah, that would be the thing to do. But I always wondered about country and I'm not a country fan, but the thing is, I always thought there should be something. You know, it's New York City, for God's sake.
Well, there were stabs at it from New Jersey as well. I mean, it is New York City because the population is there. I mean, with that many people, you would think, okay, well, you know, there's enough for a niche. But like I say, the only market that sold less, when I used to, you know, be at Epic and I'd look at the sales figures every week, I've told this story several times. I remember once Bob Lumen was on the label and he came in to sit down with me to go over the sales. Now, of course, Columbia Epic had 20 branches. And you had to take into account, too, that there were one-stops and rack jobbers. Like, you'd always see the Dallas totals being gonzo big because of Western merchandisers in Amarillo that was racking most of the West, you know, things like that. But even so, here comes in Bob. He sits down, and he's looking at this, and he said, "Riley, I'm looking at Boston." I said, "Yeah." He said, "Says 3. What's that mean?" I said, "It means what it says, Bob. They sold 3 copies. Records number 1. How could they?" Well, they sold 3 copies in Boston, and New York wasn't much better. I remember for a while there was a club in New York. Oh, Lunny's was the club where we used to take acts there in the mid-70s. And that was pretty big. And you had some people who were promoting it, but it never really did anything.
So the deal is, if you're in New York City or if you're in New York and you can't get these suburban stations like this, your only option is to either go online or, you know, Sirius XM or whatever, something like that.
Well, yeah, and you know, of course, we're talking about country today, and there's the argument as to what it is, you know, in terms of that as well. But sure, there's a lot of it online, but you know, country today is very, very different from what it was even 50 years ago when it was it was a distinct sound. Which really, I mean, I always say it's male AC today, but you know, if somebody were to do that, I think if they were to position it well and promote it well and have the bucks to do it, I think that could probably do something with today's country. I think it could.
Yeah. You know, I would think so, too.
Yeah, I absolutely. I've never spent a lot of time thinking about this anymore because, you know, my days of thinking about it are long gone. But I would think that you could. With the current sound of country, you could probably do that in any market. Again, if you positioned it correctly and promoted it correctly and understood how to program it. Because, you know, a lot of formats that will have heritage oldies and things like this, you can't do that with that kind of country. Your heritage oldies are going to be more like classic rock. Because, you know, you're not going to drop Ernest Tubb down into that. You're just not. So you know, it requires a certain amount of finesse. But could it be done? Yeah, I think it probably could.
No. Well, speaking of oldies formats, if, you know, oldies, we don't have it here anymore. But the thing is, if I was programming an oldies format, what I would do is I would take a page out of the old CKLW, which is like it would be heavily, you know, R&B and, you mm-hmm. know, I'd mix it more, you know what I'm saying?
Well, the problem, when we talk about quote-unquote oldies, if you're talking about 50s and 60s, unfortunately, the audience has aged out, you know.
The demographic.
The demographic is even older than what Music of Your Life is when Al Ham debuted it, you know. So you're talking about very old demos, and that can be a niche format, but, you know, to put a lot of dollars into that for mass appeal, I don't know too many people who would. The other thing is that when you look at oldies for people who are in a demo today, you know, what their oldies would be, you have a problem that you didn't have when you did oldies in the 50s and the 60s, because in the 50s and the 60s, every kid was listening to the same Night Jock at night. Every kid knew the same set of records. Right. It was a shared experience. Well, of course, right. If you're talking about somebody who is 40 now and you want to give them oldies, well, 20 years ago, it was not a shared experience 25 years ago. You know, so you've got a different problem there in terms of what you're going to play.
And the fragmentation.
That's it. That's right. That's exactly it. So, you know, can it be done? Sure. But I wouldn't want to sit here and format it.
It's very difficult, you know. I can see your point, and you know, that it makes a lot of sense, but
you know, the other thing today with radio, and yes, obviously music is always going to be a key. I'm not meaning to claim that it's totally secondary or tertiary, but the reality is when you're in a world where, you know, you can't be playing your favorite music anymore because, hell, someone can go online on a stream and hear their favorite music on demand. Radio, their strength is something that they're not playing on because it takes some bucks. And that's the localism, the live, you know, having personalities who are relating directly to you when the news is happening in your market, you know, sort of like what a GN does on the news, you know, but not too many music stations can budget that. They're looking for a way for the quick kill. You know, how can I do it, spend not a lot of money and get some gonzo numbers? Well, now you are dependent on music and it's not easy.
Well, basically, before I go, because break's coming up, but like when 50 years ago when POC started, they had a news department.
That's right.
And at the top of the hour, they did a newscast. It was a 5-minute newscast.
Of course. No, I remember well. I was promoting Country Records. Was his name Pete Porter or something like that? Was the program director?
He was the first Pete.
Right. Yeah, I know. I used to call him. Play this. Anyway, and it was a full-service station because that was the norm, and POC did very well.
And they still do.
Yeah.
Considering even now. But
But, you know, people, I remember in Nashville, people questioned it. Well, you know, it is Baltimore. I said, well, if it's well programmed, and it was.
Mm-hmm. And it was. He knew what he was doing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
Bob Moody did a nice job when he was there. So, yeah, it's had some good strength and programming behind it.
Well, they took a station that was the bottom of the stack, and within 3 ratings periods, I think it was.
Well, you know, that was the time when you're talking, I mean, back then, when you're buying 93.1 in Baltimore, it's not costing you anything for the most part, you know. Mm-hmm. So sure. You betcha. All right.
All righty.
Good to talk to you.
I appreciate your time.
Absolutely. Talk to you soon. Thanks for calling.
Okay.
All right. So 888-876-5593-8888-ROLLYE. And yeah, I remember that. I think that it was WFMM before that. But I digress. And we'll move on to Eduardo in Tampa next. And hopefully you two coming up on WGN Radio.
Like you done had an accident. Pull on up in the driveway. Let me show you what I can do for you. Real cheap.
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. That was the other song that Mary Ellen wanted to hear. Buddy and Ben the Man, Johnny Adams. It's from the album Room with a View of the Blues. Dr. John played on that. A couple of folks from New Orleans as well as on Rounder Records in 1988. All right, so 888-876-5593. Eduardo is in Tampa. What's up tonight?
Hey, Raleigh. A couple of things. Leonard Riegel, he was the founder of Barnes & Noble.
Well, not the founder, but he certainly was there. He's the one who expanded it, but I think, didn't he come in like about 1971 in New York? It was in New York at the time, I think, if I'm right.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, because then his brother was in there, too.
Yeah, because he, and, you know, he really, you know, not to take away from him, because obviously he turned Barnes & Noble, I think they sold something like one out of every 5 or 6 books that were out there. It was, you know, it was the Amazon before there was ever an Amazon. And so, of course, you didn't want to be a publisher. Oh, man, because he could certainly hold a publisher's hostage. So I know it was less than 10, like maybe one out of every 8 books. But whatever it was huge. And, of course, he was smart. He didn't want bookstores to, you know, be intimidating. He wanted the average, you know, working class person to be able to come in and enjoy themselves. And that was a little different.
And they put in like a coffee shop.
Oh,
yeah. Was that kind of like start? Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, but to me, I think the big deal more than anything was, like I say, just that he took it out of the elite and made it accessible and attractive to every Joe on the street. And of course, you know, the square footage and the discounts and all that were. Hang on a minute, don't go away. Stay where you are.
Okay.
And we'll pick it up right there on WGN Radio. Thank you. WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. That was the Moe Koffman Quartet. Yes, and it was on Jubilee in 1958. A number of other people have covered that, but that's Moe Koffman Quartet. And Jack in St. Charles wanted to hear it, and happy to, in fact, do that. Now, we're talking to Eduardo in Tampa. And I looked it up because I was pretty sure that Lenny didn't, found Barnes & Noble. But he actually, okay. He wound up, I don't know where he got it, but in 1971, he got $1.2 million, and that's when he bought the bookstore on Fifth Avenue. And then, of course, okay. He was responsible for, basically syndicating it. I think at one point they had something like 700 stores. But what was fascinating to me about this story is when Barnes & Noble first arose to real prominence, when they were selling like one out of seven books or whatever it was, the independent booksellers of America hated them. I mean, at conventions and stuff, they kind of hiss at them. They just absolutely detested them. Well, of course, here comes the internet after basically, 25 years ago or so. And needless to say, suddenly here's Amazon threatening everybody. And the strangest thing is suddenly the independent booksellers loved Barnes & Noble because it was like, well, at least they're brick and mortar. And so what was sworn enemies became, bosom buddies virtually overnight. And, of course, they couldn't really compete. And I think, as Lenny had said at one point, is, we sold books. We weren't a technology company. And he pretty much admitted that, we just didn't have what it took to compete. And of course, they later started BN and they put out the Nook and all those kind of things. But it really was not much of a thing. And I think they were sold about 6 or 7 years ago to a British company for something like $638 million, which was much, much less than it would have been worth a couple decades earlier.
Yeah, just on the family, his father was a professional boxer.
Right, prize fighter, yes, absolutely. I mean, he was absolute blue collar as it comes. You wouldn't think about him going into the book business. I know one of his sons like headed distribution, so he was comfortable in trucking. But it was a strange mix, and sadly the guy died of Alzheimer's, so I don't know how long it's been since he was, really cognizant of what was going on. But
so they got into GameStop.
Yeah, they tried to do everything. As far as that goes, and more than that too. And GameStop helped them. I think that there was Funko in that. Funko was a part of this, and okay. You'd have to look at that. But it was an interesting merger, and then it split. But I think the parent company, this was Funko, FUNCO. I have to look at that.
So, and this is like they're like the biggest wholesalers for college textbooks. So.
Yeah, well, a lot of that. And, that's an interesting thing, too, because Barnes & Noble, at its peak, there were they tried to buy one of the big distributors, like, major company that distributed books. I forget the name right now, but the government stopped them.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, it was... It was interesting. I'd have to, go back and read the whole thing about. But I know Lenny was involved in the creation of GameStop. There was somebody before it, like Babbage. I don't know. But anyhow, I'm pretty sure that if I looked, I'm going to find Funko somewhere. But yeah, maybe that's interesting. And of course, ultimately, GameStop, I think, bought a lot of the Barnes & Noble's shares. But that was, I don't know, that might have been after the British company came in. Somebody better than me would be doing this, I guess. But I know.
Oh, interesting story with this guy, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, very colorful. And from what I understand, he was much more comfortable sitting there with, the readers or the customers or the workers than he was trying to deal with Wall Street.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I loved, I was like going there and sitting there and reading a book. And
well, that was the whole purpose.
You get the coffee right there, yeah.
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 So.
I mean, I even take Mom over there because there's one over here. Actually, there's two of them over here.
Mm-hmm.
One on north and one south, so I like sitting there. I got a request before I go. This person died. Unfortunately, he had a heart attack over there in Japan. But he played with Diana Krall and Harry Connick, Russell Malone.
Who is it?
Who
do you want to hear is what I'm asking.
Blues for McGrew.
Okay.
If I said that right. Yeah.
Okay.
When you get a chance.
I will look for that.
Okay, Raleigh. Thank you very much for your time.
Thanks for calling.
I'll call later in the week if possible.
I appreciate it. All right. So 888-876-5593-8888, Raleigh. I'll have to further look, I guess, at the whole GameStop deal. But regardless, the history is what it is with books. And, you know, that is one of the things that, and, you know, the example we always give is Sears, World's Best Catalog. How did they not turn that into an online phenomenon, especially since Sears had invested in Prodigy? You know, I'll shake my head forever. But you see that with a lot of large companies, especially when they're very successful in one mode of business. They're not as ready to embrace any type of change or take a real chance. Like I always say, it's when things are worthless that people take a chance. And clearly at the time, Barnes & Noble was anything but worthless. 888-876-5593 is 8888 Raleigh. Leah is in Marcus Hook. Welcome to WGN Radio.
Thank you, Raleigh. How are you feeling? Are you healing?
Well, it's so weird. It's like, okay, wrist feels better, but ribs certainly don't, you know, that kind of thing. So it's just making its way around my body. Now, how are you feeling?
Oh, I'm okay. My mouth is healing.
Okay, good. So what's the latest timetable for teeth?
Well, they said 2 weeks. I have to go back for another impression.
Okay.
For my upper teeth, and then after that, I'll...
Okay.
We'll see.
Good.
I wanted to call. I heard you talking about books and bookstores, and I wanted to call and tell you about my scary time as a bookseller.
Really? When was this?
Well, it was in the latter 80s.
Okay, so this is when books still really were big at brick-and-mortar locations.
Right.
Yeah.
And it was before I went to broadcasting school,
okay.
And I was a voracious reader. It was before, for some reason, when you're on antidepressants, you can't read like you could before.
Oh, yeah? Okay.
They keep you from concentrating on books.
Or probably on anything.
Well, yeah, but you can't read a whole novel, but you can, like, certain antidepressants keep you from reading, like, a whole novel, but you can still read, like, articles and magazines and poetry and stuff like that.
Okay.
There's things online, like little blurbs
online
and stuff like that, but when you try and sit down and read a novel, you can't concentrate on it.
Okay.
You can't, like, you read 10 pages and then you're like, yeah, I can't get into this.
Okay.
But back then, I was a voracious reader. Like, I had my own shelf behind the counter, and I would put books on there. And then when my paycheck came, I would, like, it would take up, like, my whole paycheck.
You were probably their favorite employee.
I was.
Yeah.
But anyway, what happened was Salman Rushdie wrote this book called Satanic
Verses. Oh, did he ever? Yes.
And it came out, and we had a huge display in the window.
Oh, God.
And we started getting bomb threats.
Well, of course.
A lot of bomb threats.
Of course. You could have predicted that.
Well, I didn't know. I didn't know anything about it. Like, I was clueless at the time as far
as... There was a fatwa put on the guy.
Yeah, at the time, I was clueless about their religion and their, you know, the book and everything. I didn't know anything about it when it came out.
Yeah, if you remember... It was the Ayatollah Khomeini from Iran who issued that fatwa, meaning that he was calling for the assassination of Salman Rushdie. And so because Khomeini declared that it was blasphemous, that it was, against Allah. And so it was, the Rushdie affair was just huge. So that was
huge.
You were probably there in 1988.
Right.
Yes.
And
oh,
so
yes.
What happened was my boss said, well, let's take all the Salman Rushdie books and put them in the back. And then whenever someone asked for it, we couldn't display them at all, not even in the store.
Right.
What happened was because we tried that, too. We tried just displaying them in the store, not in the window, but we still got bomb threats.
Yes.
We still got threats. And so we just put them in the back room, and when we had to wait until someone asked for it, and then we had to take a brown paper bag and go in the back room and put it in the brown paper bag and then bring it up to the cash register and surreptitiously ring it up.
Right.
That's what we had. It was really scary.
Well, of course. No, this was huge, absolutely huge. And it had a number of implications in terms of how it played out. But, you know, it wouldn't take Einstein, if they had read this book in any way, shape, or form, to realize that it was going to be vehement. The protests are just out of sight, you know, as far as that goes. I mean, the guy invented verses in the Quran that weren't there, that, well, at least not that anybody knows, and in fact would be offensive to those who were more likely to cause a display if their faith were questioned in any way.
They finally got him.
Well, yeah, the deal is that the book was considered to be sacrilegious. And
yeah.
The title alone was sacrilegious. And so, yeah. Rushdie, I think, claimed that the Quran was the work of the devil or something of this nature. I mean, this was so over the top. You know, you knew how this was going to come out.
Yeah.
And so...
And they finally got him in upstate New York about 5 years ago. He was... He was giving a talk in upstate New York, and this Islamic extremist came out of the audience and stabbed him with a knife, and he lost, like, his right eye, I think.
Yeah, well, that was just a couple of years ago. He was stabbed a few times, but he's still alive, as far as I know.
Oh, yeah, he's still alive, but, I mean, they finally got to him because he's had security ever since he wrote the book.
Okay.
And they let down his security a few years ago because they thought the threat was over.
No, the threat is never over. But this was a guy, I think he was Indian, born in India, the subcontinent, and then the UK, and then the United States. And so, again, I can't imagine how someone would do this and write this and not expect this reaction. Now, I'm not saying that makes any of this right, mind you, but bottom line is, you gotta know how this is gonna be. So yeah, if your bookstore were to put this in the, you know, anywhere on display, you gotta know how this is gonna turn out.
Well, see, none of us had read the book.
Well, you saw the title.
No, we didn't know.
You
didn't
saw know. The title.
Yeah, but we didn't know.
Obviously.
We didn't know.
Yeah, well, you found out fairly quickly.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah, and you know, of course, from a philosophical standpoint and all, it's horrible to think that you have to censor things in that way and all that. But in this case, that bookstore wants
bookstore.
To stay there,
I
and
know.
It, but you know, that bookstore wants to stay in business and not be burned to the ground. That's the way that's going to go. So
and keep the employees safe. You know, I mean, we didn't want to be blown up. You know.
Well, right, exactly. So, yeah, it's. I don't know what I know. Someone was on trial for that, but I don't even know what the outcome was. I haven't been paying any attention.
Yeah, but it was a scary time.
Of course, it was.
I just couldn't believe that it was happening in America. I mean, you know, I just
sure you can.
I
sure
just
you
couldn't
can.
Back then. Now I can, but
yeah.
You know, back then it was so new. You know.
Yeah. Well, you weren't expecting it front and center. That's for sure. But yeah, that was the minute that was published. I can't imagine that anybody involved with that wasn't expecting what happened in terms of the outcry.
Yeah, I didn't even know it was about the Quran.
Well, you found out quickly.
Yeah, I did. I have a copy somewhere, but I've never even... I've tried reading it, but I just...
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it isn't anything that would interest you, and I understand that. But the publisher had to have known.
And now, of course, you know, I've studied over the years, and I've learned all about other religions and stuff, and now I understand why it was so... You know.
Well, like I say, the publisher had to have known that this was going to be very controversial. And I've never bothered to try and investigate this to find out, was that something that actually attracted the publisher to this? Because, you know, controversy can sell as far as that goes. So I'd be foolish to comment beyond saying that there's probably a lot of sides of this that haven't been fully investigated, or at least not brought to the public attention.
Well, and I heard Salman Rushdie say in the interview when they were talking about him being stabbed, he said he never knew it would have this effect on people.
Well, I find that interesting because, you know, he had somewhat of a fairly strong leftist background, and he had to understand how things came down, but you never know.
Yeah.
Well, interesting. And so he's still with us. So, yeah, and timing is everything too, you know, I mean, as far as that goes, not to say that it wouldn't be a major issue now, but boy, was it a major issue then.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. So that's my experience with the book.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, as a young girl working in the bookstore, that had to be utterly amazing.
It was.
Yeah.
It was.
Yeah, I'll bet.
It was. And we had a hell of a winter that year. I remember it was, like, snowing like crazy, and some guy hit my car in the parking lot.
Oh, geez.
Some 80-year-old man, and I went out there and yelled at him. And
yeah. Yeah, so...
It was a crazy year. It was a crazy time.
Interesting. Well, that's what makes life interesting.
That was in Westtown. You know where the Westtown Shopping Center
is?
Yes,
absolutely.
Yeah, that's where it was. It was Encore Books in Westtown Shopping Center.
All right. Well, now, with all the hoopla going on, were you selling more books or less during this period?
Oh, we were selling a lot of books.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, we were selling a lot of, you know, satanic verses, but they just had to ask.
Well, right. Yes, like under-the-counter books, exactly.
Yeah,
interesting.
Yeah, under-the-counter books. Like we were selling drugs or something,
right,
you know?
Right,
I mean,
right.
Like,
well, like it used to be back in the day when you'd ask for a Playboy. Yeah.
Yeah, yes, right. Exactly.
All right. Well, thanks. Interesting stuff. Good to hear from you.
Okay, thanks.
All right. Yeah, I hadn't thought about that in a while, but yeah, what were they thinking? Maybe somebody had, and I'll try to look it up, maybe somebody has looked at the publisher to find out, were they, in fact, courting dissent to sell books? Was this a surprise to them? I don't know. If you do, love to hear about it. Talk to James on the South Side with his 4,832 stories and plenty of room for you, and the news coming up on WGN Radio.
Out on the plains, down your Santa Fe, I met a cowboy right in the range one day. And as he jogged along, I heard him singing a most peculiar cowboy song. It was a ditty he learned in the city. Come a-tie-yip-tie-yi, get along, get hip, little doggies, get along. Better be on your way, get along. Get hip, little doggies, and he trucked him on down the old fairway, singing his cow-cow boogie in the strangest way. Come-a-tie-yi, come-a-tie-yip-tie-yi, singing his cowboy song. He's just too much. He's got a knocked-out Western accent with a Harlem touch. He was raised on local weed. He's what you call a swing half-breed, singing his cow-cow boogie in the strangest way. Come-a-tie-yi, come-a-tie-yip-tie-yi. Ha ha ha.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. And yeah, Ella Mae Morse is the lady, and Freddie Slack is the band leader, and Cow Cow Boogie is the song. Jack and St. Charles wanted to hear it. 1942 on Capitol. Interesting, 2 years later on Decca, Ella Fitzgerald and the Ink Spots did it.
Out on the plains, down near Santa Fe, I met a cowboy riding the range one day. And as he jogged along, I heard him singing a most peculiar cowboy song. It was a ditty he learned in the city. Come a ta ay come a ta yippee.
Get along. Get hip, little dog. Get along. Better be on your way. Get along. Get hip, little doggy. And he trucked him on down that old fairway, singing his cow cow boogie in the strangest way. Coming to ya, ya, yay. Coming to yip till ya, yay.
Singing his cowboy songs. He's just too much. He's got a knocked out western accent with a Harlem touch. He was raised on local wheat.
Yeah, I think I prefer it. But either way, Jack and St. Charles got to hear both versions. 888-876-5593. We have Tubby in Chicago. Welcome back to WGN Radio.
Hey, Raleigh.
How are you?
I'm good. You're starting to mend up a little bit. I told you, mind over matter, honey.
Yeah, boy. I'm with you there.
I know you said that. Anyway, I've been praying for you. I don't care if nobody else pray. I've been praying for you.
Well, thank you. Thank
you. You know, y'all be talking about this stuff, and it reminds me. I get so infuriated about customer service and how people just seem to don't care.
Exactly.
That's the most frustrating. Services. It's something. So tonight, I'll start with today. I went out late. I was just getting some rest. I didn't work. And people closed. I said, okay, well, I'm going to go and go to this, what you call Burger King. I was up at Howard. I got up to Howard right after that incident, okay?
Yeah.
And I won't go into details because I don't know nothing. I just know it was swarmed and they told me, you know, what had just happened, right? So I don't know anything either. But anyway, there's nothing open. There's nothing open. I went over to Burger King. I said, well, at least I try to get a fish sandwich. Because I had four bags of Ruffles and like three pops, warm pops, because the refrigerator was out. And I was like, man. Okay, and then I went to this place up on Howard. We'll go there 365 days, right? I'm not going to call it out. People know. Anyway, right on in Evanston, they closed at 9 o'clock. First I went to Burger King. They closed at 9. Then I went over there. And then by my house, when I get off the bus, there's a McDonald's, right? They wouldn't let me do the walkthrough.
Right.
Now, you know, 72, I need a quickie.
Yeah.
And I usually get buy one, do one for something that's not perishable. So then when I get up tomorrow, I don't have to just go out to get something. Because I eat good on the weekend, my vegetables and whatnot. And I'm like, what is this? I just never realized. But I know about 3 months ago or whatever, I had called around. I found out, I said, look, these people are giving me for $30 a drop when I get my check on this Chinese food.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not getting that flavor that you get when you get the little carton of this and a little carton of that.
Mm-hmm.
And every once in a while I get some beef fried rice, but I want my rangoon. Now they can't even say crab rangoon because they're not putting crab in it, okay?
Right, right.
But they can call it rangoon. But I understand, but, you know, I had to stop and think. I know, because you know I'm food service over 50 years. People have to pay their rent. Just like you got a little store on the block, you're really supposed to make your rent that
right.
day. You know
right,
what I mean?
Of course.
And if you can't make your rent that day, you're already behind, right?
Right. Yeah.
And I was like, we live so privileged in America, okay? And I know, like I told you, I went to, I was at Maryville with Father Smith, and I grew up on the west side over there. When King came rolling through over there, when I left Michigan, I ended up being on the west side. My mother, that's where she was when we got to town.
Mm-hmm.
But I was like, this is ridiculous. I called, so finally I found a restaurant over on Irving Park near Ashland, a couple blocks from Ashland. You know what that woman wanted for all her entrees was like $16 a piece.
Jeez.
And you know, Chinese food, I'm scared to go to Chinatown. I haven't been out south in a while.
Yeah.
I'm just really not comfortable just jumping on the train and hitting the neighborhoods like you used to.
Right.
It's just a really a scary thing. Okay, so one day I'm going to tell you about my adventure, this bookstore. I don't know if you remember this guy. There was a guy from Clark. I lived north for quite some time. When I was in chef's training back in the 70s, I was up on Pine Grove and Waveland, okay? So this guy down on Clark, he had his bookstore, and he kept threatening us, saying, I'm moving to California. He had books everywhere. And then there was that other guy over there on Clark and near Belmont, down a little couple blocks south of there. He had books all in the windows. He had books everywhere stacked up. He just finally got out of there, went by on the bus. I said, he's gone. But then I hated when the guy left from California, because you could go in there and be in there for some time.
Yeah.
But I will let our friends know that who's hanging in there. Up on Sheridan Road, what's the name of that little critter? Anyway, it's up on Sheridan Road, right there on Sheridan and Pratt. And he's got little nooks where you can sit down and read, and you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
And it's just so cool. But one day I went out. I love photography. When I used to get depressed, I found out there was one cure for my boredom in life and for my curiosity stopped. So I would read maps. I love reading maps, okay? So I went and I just went to get me a street map. Found out that down on Michigan Avenue, Rand McNally had closed. That one where you leave the cultural center and you're heading north before the Medicine Mile, there was a Rand McNally's on the west side of the block.
Mm.
They get closed down altogether. They're making it so that people who find something they want to do, they can't even do that because big business interferes and shuts them down.
Yeah.
So anyway, I finally found one over there. My boyfriend, he said he wanted that pizza. I guess I can call it in there. Pierre's or whatever.
Okay.
But it was also over there by... Okay, let me get my brain together. Let me slow down. I found it. I did find it. But while I was over there, I found it because I was going to the bookstore, the big bookstore, Barnes & Noble. I had been down on Rush Street. I had been on another one, Michigan, when they still were around. They had one on Diversity, you know what I'm saying? They had a couple of them. I went there. It took me forever. I finally got one. Excuse me, before you couldn't get one, a Chicago detailed street map. I'm just really, like every time somebody goes to New York, you always have to say, bring me back a New York subway map, because they change, okay?
Yeah.
I just love, like I'll be watching a cooking show on Channel 11, and they show the neighborhood, and I'm looking to see what train stop they're at, you know, or the subway stop they're coming out of. But I still can go there and get around. Boston, too. All of D.C., all of them that I lived in, I can get around fine. I just love reading the map. But it took me forever to get that Chicago street map. But what it is, so when I'm like on Metro, one day this girl, her car, she had to take the Metro because her car was broke down. You know, it took everything for me to get that woman. She I don't think she took it because I tried to keep an extra map in my purse from the CTA in case I run into people visiting Chicago or whatnot. And I say, oh, here. People just death on them phone. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they play their role. But I mean, it's just like getting somebody to actually look at a map and understand the 00 at State Madison. It's like people don't even want to hear it. So I'm cool. You know, I just kind of decided you know when you got an ear and you know when you ain't got an ear, okay?
Right.
They don't want to, you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Because I found that Chicago, man, I lived in all them places, Miami, nobody, even New York City, does not compare to the CTA, okay?
Yeah.
I promise you that. Nobody, okay? You can, when I get up, when I'm at Divine and shared about my house, I'm going to get off the phone for the night. I can get the 155 stop in front of my house. I can get the Divine. I can get the 151, the 36.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
The 147. It's amazing. So the way the city is laid out. But anyway, I just wanted to chime in real quick for tonight because I didn't go down to the restaurant. I've been listening. I just think this is the greatest show in the earth. I mean, God, I've done a lot of stuff and been a lot of places. So this is, like I said, when I came in the other night, I heard your voice on the radio and the people calling in. They sound so content and the madness and the craziness of the world was not, you know, in place.
Yes.
It's just, you know, I'm like, I worked for Tommy Ann Satter's, and I worked at another restaurant down there. But I knew Ann Satter's. I was eating in there when Ann Satter had the place, okay?
Yeah.
And so me and me was right around the corner, right? And I was like, you know, those things, I'm going to tell you, I love my memories, and I encourage others to don't let those memories go. And we will continue to dream. Don't let nobody diminish your dreams.
Yes.
Never know. You never know what you could be doing and how you could be helping somebody just by, you know, it's just a neighborhood thing. In the city of Chicago, the guy at the bookstore, I was just like going there and he had books everywhere. But it's just like my guy up here, Amarillo Books. Anyway, the bookstore.
Yeah.
I got him looking for Rufus Snodomeke, okay? I mean, you know, I don't want to pay full price for it, and I always buy my verb books secondhand. But you stay at it, Raleigh, and you stay strong in your mind because you know what to do. You already know what to do. I can't tell you because I know you know. That's why I call you because I know you all type of things. And bless you, my sister, okay?
Well, it's good to talk to you, and I'll hear from you soon.
One day I'm going to let you talk, okay?
Oh, no. It's better when you do, and I appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay,
bye. All right, so that's where we'll pick it up with James on the South Side. He'll be closing out the show tonight on WGN Radio.
Hoovering by my suitcase, trying to find a warm place to spend the night. Heavy rain falling, seems I hear your voice calling, it's all right. A rainy night in Georgia, a rainy night in Georgia, it seems like it's raining all over the world. I feel like it's raining all over the world. Neon signs are flashing, taxi cabs and buses passing through the night.
WGN Radio, I'm Ronnie James, and of course that's Brooke Benton. Marianne in Chicago wanted to hear Rainy Night in Georgia, and now she has. All right, so yeah, Tony Joe White wrote that. All right, so 888-876-5593 takes us to James on the South Side. So, James, welcome back to WGN.
You sound better.
Well, thank you. Now, how do you feel?
Oh, I'm doing okay. I can't complain. I haven't sprained anything, so.
Well, good.
I have to, yeah.
Good, and you're not trying to go on vacation, man. You gave me a lot of stories there. I don't know. Maybe the family that missed their dream cruise thanks to a delay on Delta lucked out, because I'm looking at some of the stories. And by the way, they got their money back, which is good. But I'm looking at some of the stories here that you've sent. And parasitic worms after a 5-star resort in the Caribbean vacation. Passengers at 35,000 feet left fighting for breath. Two students mysteriously ill. It's a nightmare to leave your house.
Then there was the car that helped out its owner by dying, so she couldn't get to the date. It turned out the date was a murderer.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, that's good. Now, one of the more inexplicable things was you gave me this story about... I had surgery to lengthen my legs, and then it went horribly wrong. I don't know about you, but I would think just the premise was horribly wrong.
The way that this surgery is originally out of Russia, out of the old Soviet Union.
But this seems more like it should be coming out of Dhaka or Auschwitz. I mean, this is horrible. So here was a girl. She was 5'2". She wanted to be 5'5" for reasons that are unexplainable to me, inexplicable. But so she has this surgery where they break her bones and put in metal rods in her legs. Well, anyway, it goes horribly wrong. She's still got legs, which is a wonder. But I can't imagine someone doing that.
A doctor with any sense would basically say, Be satisfied with what you
exactly.
got. They usually concentrate on, like, there are people who have, like, certain, like, borderline dwarfism, like,
right.
4'9", 4", like, in that sort of thing.
But even with that, they usually do it through growth hormone, not through trying to break your bones and stick in metal rods.
Yeah, the way this weird thing works is, like, okay, they break it, and it's just, after the rods, and they adjust the rods just enough to hold that the bone's supposed to grow into the space.
Right, right. Yeah, exactly. The whole theory is scary to me. Then we have a guy who didn't brush his teeth for 40 days and damn near died from kidney failure.
Yeah, and you kind of ask yourself, I realize he was depressed, here's the thing. I mean, you're going to... Okay, they are finding out more and more that dental hygiene is very important.
Oh, yeah.
In fact, like Alzheimer's, apparently, okay, they think that may have some trigger to certain things that aren't done properly with the dental hygiene.
No, all of that.
Yeah.
And, of course, the whole body is interconnected, to say the least. But the other thing is, this guy was in what they would refer to as deep depression. I mean, that's basically somebody who, frankly, isn't even getting out of bed to use the bathroom. Now, in that case, how can he be alone for 40 days anyway? I'm not surprised he didn't brush his teeth. I'm surprised that somebody didn't make sure that he was not defecating in the bed.
There was supposedly a story where basically, I think it was Houdini supposedly was so, I think, depressed over his mother's death that he at one point had pretty much stayed in bed
least
for a certain amount of time.
Yeah, no, you hear that, and those stories are coming. But, yeah, I thought it was interesting. But absolutely, you don't brush your teeth for 40 days, you get an oral infection like a tooth or something. Absolutely, that will go to septicemia. You betcha it will. But there were so many stories this week like that, it made me afraid to get out of bed. All right, now, on that note, we've ended the show. Call me earlier tomorrow night. We'll go over more of these.
Okay,
right,
I was going to ask about a song request. I'll say... Okay, Patsy Cline, I'm going to say, Faded Love.
Faded Love. I'll do that. I'm not doing your Roseanne Cash, by the way, when the master calls, because I played it. It was a funeral dirge. But Faded Love I will play. All right. Thanks. Appreciate
it.
All right. So on that note, we thank Adam for keeping us on the air and John for screening your calls. Above all, I thank you for calling. Do it again tomorrow night, 21 hours from now. Until then, that's a wrap. I'm Raleigh James. It's WGN Radio.